Since April of 1985, this is the DX Audio Service, a nonprofit organization devoted to the radio listening hobby.
Thanks, Doc, and welcome to the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service for June 2002. This is issue number 201, and I'm your host, Fred Vobey, the publisher of the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service, coming to you from the Dayton Hamvention in Dayton, Ohio. The address for the publication is 706 McKenzie Drive, Lima, Ohio, 45805-1835. You can contact me by telephone at the number of 419-228-6223. The fax number is 419-221-1609. The action line is 419-224-1609 for NRC Musings to the Members only. And if you're on the internet, you can send email to Fred V, that's F-R-E-D-V, at nrcdxas.org. And the National Radio Club's website is at www.nrcdxas.org. Now, if you'd like to become a member of the DX Audio Service and live in the United States of America, the cost is $28. To members in Canada, the subscription rate is $32. To Europe and elsewhere, it's $40. Those prices are also the renewal rate. Tapes are sent via first-class mail, and you keep your cassettes. If you'd like to subscribe, make your checks payable to the National Radio Club Incorporated and send them to me at the address in Lima that I just mentioned. Well, as I said, we're here at the 2002 Dayton Hamvention in Dayton, Ohio. And here's another guy that just happens to be at the convention. However, this was recorded a little bit earlier. Here's Jerry Starr with a look at the AM Switch.
Hi, everybody. Jerry Starr with the June edition of the AM Switch from the pages of the National Radio Club's DX News. One great big switch today. Reference number 536, and we begin with 30, count them, 30 call letter changes. On 610 WNTW Winchester, Virginia to WTFX. 670 WKFN Farragut, Tennessee becomes WMTY. 680 WJIE Newburgh, Kentucky to WDRD. 690 KQMQ Honolulu, Hawaii becomes KORL as the Heritage Call returns to the Honolulu market. On 920 KZMR El Paso, Texas becomes KAJZ. On 1000 WGOG in Walhalla, South Carolina, changed first to WSSW, then had second thoughts, and have now changed to WSMW. 1010 WPYK Dora, Alabama becomes WCOC. 1070 WLFE Plattsburgh, New York changes to WTWK. 1190 WECC St. Mary's, Georgia to WWIO. 1200 WQDQ Nashville, Tennessee to WKDA. 1210 WWJR in Kingsley, Michigan becomes WLDR. Also on 1210 KRRR Laramie, Wyoming changing to KKHI. 1220 WQSA Sarasota, Florida becomes WIBQ. 1250 WCHO Washington Courthouse, Ohio changes to WKSI. 1260 KJAZ Beverly Hills, California to KSUR. And on 1260 WNRK Newark, Delaware to WAMS. 1330, the new station in Shasta Lake City, California will be KSNA. 1350 KEWS San Bernardino, California to KTDD. 1400 WABY Albany, New York to WHTR. 1400 KEWL Texarkana, Texas to KKTK. 1420 KCCN Honolulu, Hawaii to KKEA. 1420 WTWK St. Albans, Vermont decided they didn't like that call, so now they've changed to WRSA. 1430 WKDA in Madison, Tennessee becomes WPLN. 1450 WTKI Huntsville, Alabama changes to WHOH. 1450 KFSD Escondido, California to KSPA. 1460 WGNA Albany, New York to WDDY. 1490 KENE Toppenish, Washington to KYNR. 1510 WVAC Norwalk, Ohio to WLKR. They're returning to a previous call. 1550 KAYD in Canyon, Texas becomes KZRK. And on 1600 WAMS in Dover, Delaware changes to WNRK. An unusually large list of applications for new stations include 820 Taylorsville, Utah, 1140 Ensley, Florida, 1160 Cleveland, Missouri, 1180 Truckee, California, 1180 Jacksonville, Oregon, 1210 Bixby, Oklahoma, 1210 Abilene, Texas, and we'll mention those two later, on 1490 in Level Plains, Alabama, 1600 St. Cloud, Florida, and two competing applications in Hawaii on 1600, one in Waiapahu and one in Makaha. And on 1700, an application for a new station in Warren, New Jersey for 50 watts day and night. This will be an experimental station to test the new Ubiquiti digital AM system. Applications of interest on 1210 KGYN in Guymon, Oklahoma, would like to move their city of license to Oklahoma City. If that happens, then the two 1210 applications we mentioned above for new stations in Bixby, Oklahoma, and Abilene, Texas, will become active. 1500 KIEV in Burbank, California. Now they want to move their city of license to Culver City, California. Their most recent construction permit ran out on April the 25th, but they petitioned the FCC to reconsider this expiration and to reinstate the CP with those parameters showing Culver City, California. And some activity up in the X-band on 1690 WSWK in Adel, Georgia, would like to move their city of license to Avondale Estates, Georgia. And also on 1690 WHTE, Johnson City, Illinois, would like to move closer to the Chicago market. They want to change their city of license to Berwyn, Illinois. Two items in other news of interest on 1080 WINX in Murfreesboro, North Carolina. This station is silent for what they term technical reasons. And on 1560 WINV in Inverness, Florida, has now officially changed their city of license to Beverly Hills, Florida. And that's a wrap on AM Switch. And speaking of Florida, you know where we're going next. Here's John Bowker.
Well, thanks once again, Jerry, and hello, everybody. Today, we're going to be hearing from stations operating at 720 on your AM radio dial as our trip up the dial as we cross the country. We have at least one station break from every U.S. station operating on this channel. And of course, that's not too hard to do, since there are two simply mammoth stations that dominate 720. But one of my major disappointments I must share with you, 2 years ago, I spent 3 days with Linda on Prince Edward Island in the city of Charlottetown, and they have a 720 station, and not once did they ever mention CHTN and the word Charlottetown in the same paragraph, let alone the same sentence. They'd give weather reports for, you know, the island, and for Nova Scotia and New Brunswick. But no, never the city. Oh dear, so we don't have CHTN for you today. But with that said, we move on to the market of Pennsylvania's state capital, the suburban community of Shiremanstown, to open the June 2002 DX Audio Service Travelogue.
Weekend fun on 720 AM Stereo, WWII, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
Via satellite, I'm Jack Lott, and this is news on the Business Radio Network.
You know, you heard him say Harrisburg, not Shiremanstown. Well, we have him on tape at the same week that we were there, always reporting as Shiremanstown. So I played you a bogus one, only so you know that sometimes they mess up too. But that was top of the hour, incidentally. And, you know, that station came on the air quite recently too, 1987, and I was just noticing that my charts on 720 show stations from way back when in Wake Forest, North Carolina, another one out in Templeton, California, they were on 720 back in the good old days. But they're gone now, and in fact, this next station was listed as being in Brevard, North Carolina at one time.
Douglas on the USA Radio Network.
You're listening to Anchor Broadcasting, WKJV Asheville, WGCR Pisgah Forest. It's 11 o'clock and good morning to you. And taking a quick look at our forecast, coming to you from the National Weather Service, conditions will be improving today.
We were listening there for Pisgah Forest, North Carolina. Well, here next is a station operating, and let me get this straight now. Operating with 7,970 watts. Boy, you talk about careful engineering. Of course, only during the daytime hours. They're non-directional, and considering that they are some 50 miles southwest of Atlanta, it's a small town with a great past, but there's not a heck of a lot going on there these days, I can tell you.
An internet step-by-step and any specialized Microsoft classes your business requests. Computer Solutions, Sawmill Shopping Center, LaGrange, taking you into the next millennium.
720, The Mix, your station for the best variety of gospel music. WMXY, Hogansville, LaGrange.
Yeah, we're going to go back a little here to the old time way.
WMXY, right? We'll have to come back through Georgia on our next trip, back from Lima, perhaps, because they've changed their call letters to WGSE these days. That was the first of the low-powered stations on 720. But after that, others followed almost immediately.
You found Sunshine 720 WRZN, Hernando.
Syrian-backed Muslims claim responsibility. I'm Tim Sullivan on the Satellite News Network.
You know, the news never changes, does it? Boy. Some of you probably recall that I once did a big band disc jockey show on a number of stations in central New Jersey back in the 70s and the 80s. One of them even on FM. What about that? So you can understand my interest in that station, WRZN. It's far enough up the road from Tampa that we just don't pick it up here on a regular schedule, you know, on the bedside radio or nothing quite that. Of course, we have similar big band program schedule right here in Tampa Bay, provided by WGUL at 860 on the dial. We'll get to that another month or two or year or two. Oh, dear. Anyway, it's time to move on to the Northwest.
Where divine loves first, WWGM, Richland Jackson.
WWDF, that's another daytime-only station that, this one at least I can understand better. It has 5,000 watts, and it's right on the edge of the state capital in Jackson, Mississippi, so I'll bet anything, though, as soon as they turn off their carrier at night, WGN comes booming in down there. I'll bet you. But we continue our travels with our dials locked on 720, and as we approach the 90th longitude at that northern latitude, all we hear is the blowtorch from Illinois.
Whoops, we just slipped over 8 o'clock, didn't we? Well, 8 a.m. already on a Saturday, and you're listening to Radio 720, WGN Chicago. It's the Tribune Broadcasting Station.
The Champion Bulls cleaning up after the victory and planning for the next celebration. That story and all the news right after a check on traffic with Kathleen Corcoran.
You know, that is a very recent recording, I'm not only tempted, but I've just decided I'm going to play you one from 30 years ago of WGN.
And it's so pure, so free from any pollution that it's even recommended for babies. Now, to get more information about Mountain Valley Pure Spring Water or to arrange home delivery, call Mountain Valley at 569-2820. That telephone number is 569-2820. You like Mountain Valley water, it's good for you. This is Lou Boudreaux. This has been the Leadoff Man, brought to you by Yale Insurance Agency. Stay tuned now for Vince Lloyd and tonight's ball game between the Cubs and the Astros. This has been a presentation of WGN Sports. This is WGN Radio Chicago.
You know, it's a fun station to listen to just about any time of day. But over the years, they've certainly attracted the most entertaining of news and talk folks. They lost a big one, their morning man, in a plane crash a couple of years ago. But WGN still ranks at the top of Chicago's airwaves. Well, we'll move along once again and head for the 1998 DX Audio Service and National Radio Club Convention in San Antonio.
Saludos hasta aquí, la media naranja.
Adiós, que les vaya bien. Hasta mañana.
¿De dolor, papá? Sí.
Bill Clinton hiciera el anuncio sobre su política en relación a China hace media hora.
Okay, if you were geographically challenged, you wouldn't have recognized that Universal City is a suburb of San Antonio, even though the girls in that jingle just told you so. But if WGN rules the middle of the nation for a good 700 or 800 miles, what about the western parts?
The news, and then the sports, and then I'll be back with you for a while to talk right here on KDOT.
From Jackie Gons Plaza downtown, this is KDWN Las Vegas.
Baby, of Bradley. At least five people are dead from a mid-air crash north...
You know, what he said was K-Don, D-W-N being Don, so... And when Linda and I were first out there in Las Vegas, their ID referred to their studio location as Number 1 Main Street. That's the way they used to say it, right in the middle of the ID. So we drove downtown the first time we were there. Could we find the studios? No, sirree. We finally had to call them to get directions. Oh, well. But that's a big station, and what a clean audio chain they have in their transmitting. Gosh, that's great. You know, a few years back, Rusty Curry, one of our subscribers, took pity on us and sent us this next ID from his home location. And it's the only recording I have of KFIR, so I'm deeply appreciative.
And is on the road, and he's right around the corner at 4 o'clock, right after Paul Harvey, here at Better Country, KFIR. From the South City Employland, this is KFIR, Sweet Home.
The latest from ABC News, I'm Bob Hart. A patient's bill of rights passes the House.
Sounds like Bob Hart's coming in with a team of horses or something there, but no, that was a satellite receiver problem that KFIR was having. And their 1,000 watts during the daytime hours, I gather, sort of fills up the gap for AM listeners traveling between Corvallis and, say, down to Eugene, Springfield. We spent a lot of time just to the east of Sweet Home, over in Bend, Oregon. And there's a range of mountains right in there, and we simply could not get a clean signal out of KFIR over in Bend, so maybe we were doing something wrong. Now, for this next station, I put together a montage of IDs. Some were recorded locally, and at least one was recorded from Norway. Some of you will remember the year that Werner Reusch attended the NRC DXAS convention. When was that? Was that Milwaukee? I think it was. And anyway, he brought me some of the following IDs. As a matter of fact, along with an amazing number of others he had caught on a de-expedition out into Norway from his home in Switzerland.
Concern is everything that concerns Northwest Alaska. KOTZ, Kotzebue.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to KOTZ, Kotzebue. This is KOTZ, Radio 720 in Kotzebue.
KOTZ, more music? More music than what, I want to ask, but I'm not. I'm just going to move on. Oh, boy, they don't have a lot of competition up that way, as you can imagine. Our final ID for this month came to us once again from Carl Dabelstein, and all would be well with this. It's a wonderful station to have on tape. See if you can spot the problem with us.
It's bonus time in the KUAI Magic Cash Contest. Earlier today, we announced the serial number of our dollar of the day. Now I've got another way for you to win $100 in cash. KUAI's bonus buck. If you have a $1 bill with the serial number L9290977J, you can win $100 by bringing that bill to the KUAI offices by 4 o'clock tomorrow. An extra big way to win here on Kauai's radio station. Bring it to KUAI and win $100. KUAI's answer to the economy, Magic Cash. Watch it grow just by listening to Kauai's radio station, 720 KUAI.
Pretty neat, huh? And recorded, I believe, from a neighboring island. Is that right, Skip? Anyway, what's the problem? Well, nothing much, considering where that station's located, but I wish they had bothered to name their city of license during the ID. Oh, son of a gun. Big deal, right? Say, I want to acknowledge that Ron Gitshire sent in a magnificent CD, and in a month or so I'm going to be giving you a couple of cuts from that. But I want to thank him for that, and contributors to recordings heard on today's travelogue, in addition to Rusty Curry and Carl Dabelstein, are Mark Durenberger and Dale Hamm, Don League, Werner Reutsch, and Mark Strickert. Oh, and son John S. Bowker. He once took my picture on Michigan Avenue out in front of that big picture window looking into the WGN studio, so that counts for a contribution too, I guess. Thanks, John. You want to get in touch with me? Send mail to John Bowker, that's B-O-W-K-E-R, and here's a new mailing address for me. The Association Building, 1009 North Pebble Beach Boulevard, Sun City Center, Florida, 33573. And meantime, from Michigan Avenue in the Windy City, we take you now to U.S. Route 3 as it crosses the state line into the gateway city of New Hampshire. Here's Bruce Conti.
Hello, DXers. I'm Bruce Conti, and this is the DX Digest. When several DXers get together for a DXpedition at a great location, it's not only a chance to hear some rare signals, it's also an opportunity to share experiences and learn new ideas. Such was the case when I joined West Coast DXers Guy Atkins, John Bryant, John Fallows, Nick Hall Patch, Chuck Hutton, Don Nelson, and Bruce Portzer for the Spring 2002 Grayland DXpedition. Grayland is a small beach vacation community located on the Pacific coast about halfway between Seattle, Washington and Portland, Oregon. The objective, of course, was to receive Trans-Pacific DX, but for me, this DXpedition was much more than that. It was indeed a learning experience above and beyond being unaccustomed to hearing various Asian-Pacific languages and unfamiliar signals never before heard from my East Coast home base. I'll get to the DX in a moment. That's a Cybico, one of the new ideas I came away with from the Grayland DXpedition, the Cybico Wireless Entertainment System. The Cybico, spelled C-Y-B-I-K-O, is a handheld wireless communications device, essentially a handheld mini-computer with a keyboard and LCD display. It runs on rechargeable nickel metal hydride batteries or an external wall wart transformer and has an RS-232 serial interface cable, so you can hook it up to your computer to download software and send or receive email. The wireless Cybico can be used to communicate with other Cybicos within a 300-foot range with 30 separate channels available in the 902 to 928 megahertz frequency range. So what's this got to do with DXing? The Cybico allowed DXers to communicate with each other while DXing. In other words, you didn't have to pull off your headphones to yell out to other DXers what you were receiving. While continuing to monitor a signal, you could type out a message and send it to all the other Cybicos within range. This was especially important in the Grayland DXpedition because there were enough of us that we had to split up into two rooms. Like a pager or cell phone, the Cybicos could be set to vibrate to let you know when a message was received. The Cybicos were a great tool for keeping each other informed. They would be great tools for car DXpeditions as well. Chuck Hutton and I tested how well the Cybico signal would travel from within a car and found that not only would a Cybico signal make it a short distance between cars, but a message sent from inside a car made it indoors to the radio rooms. I can imagine a few of us getting together DXing from our cars on the Granite Pier in Rockport, Massachusetts, rather than having to roll down the window to yell out DX and let in the mosquitoes and no-see-ums, we could be sending and receiving messages via our Cybicos. The Cybicos are available cheap on eBay. I just bought two of them to try in the next car DXpedition with Mark Connolly and the Boston area DXers for $13 each, plus shipping. Neat toys for DXing. Next learning experience, grounding. As many DXers know, sandy soil makes a poor ground. At Grayland, we learned just how poor it really is. John Bryant had planned on experimenting with buy-in remote-controlled beverage terminations, but in his initial experiments, found that changing termination resistances had absolutely no effect on beverage performance. Over the first couple nights DXing, I had noted that there seemed to be too much domestic interference coming off off the backside of the beverages. The beverage antennas were aimed northwest, west, and southwest, and should have nulled signals from the contiguous 48 states and Canada. That wasn't the case. In fact, after John mentioned the poor results of his experiments, I put two and two together and figured that it was like the beverages weren't terminated and thus bidirectional. We tested the termination of one beverage, varying resistance from thousands of ohms all the way down to zero, and confirmed that there was no measurable difference in beverage performance. The beverages were terminated to ground in sand dunes, and although the sand was moist, we concluded that the ground just wasn't working. We brainstormed possible solutions. Extending the wires across the beach and terminating it in the ocean was not an option because of the public use of the beach, including people driving vehicles up and down the beach. Attaching ground radials was an option, but the radials would have had to run in other directions, as again, having an exposed wire on the beach would have been risky. Then Guy Atkins came up with the idea to reinforce the ground with cat litter. That's right, kitty litter. Not just any kind of cat litter. It had to be clay-based clumping cat litter. Why? Well, it turns out that bentonite clay, the ingredient that gives clay cat litter its clumping characteristic, magnetically holds 7 to 10 times its weight in water and swells up to 18 times its dry volume, making a perfect bond between a ground rod and ground. It was worth a try. We made a trip to the local hardware store for a copper pipe and to the grocery store for some cat litter. At the beverage termination, an approximately 2 foot deep, 1 foot round hole was dug, a copper pipe pounded into the center, and then the hole was filled with 25 pounds of cat litter while adding water. Tests proved it worked, as some 20 dB front-to-back ratio was measured, a significant improvement. And the DX that night was some of the best of the entire de-expedition. One might say it was perfect. Here's a DX signal from radio station V7AD, Marshall Islands, on 1098 kilohertz. Listen for the call letters and mention of the World News Special. Some tough DX there. V7AD Marshall Islands as received at 10 hours UTC. Now check out this fantastic signal from JOQR Tokyo, Japan on 1134 kilohertz at 15 hours UTC with a music countdown program and call letter jingle.
の放送は逃げました。3月30日の放送は東京ドーム放送は逃げました。スペシャルストリートパワーオンウェイ水木一郎さんと影山博文さんが生で歌ったり、リスナーの投票で人気アニメ自慢組を決めたり、当日行われるキャラコンの速報など盛りだくさんの内容でお送りします。ライブして動画送信もやっちゃうよ。楽しみ。
This next signal is from Taiwan on 1161 kilohertz, coming up to 16 hours UTC. The time when DX was being received. At 16 hours UTC, signals were still coming in. This is 8 a.m. Pacific time. Local sunrise was 2 hours earlier. Quite a bit different from DXing on the U.S. East Coast, where transatlantic signals might start to show an hour or two before local sunset and continue until European dawn. Trans-Pacific DX doesn't get started for the most part until 10 hours UTC. By the time transatlantic DXers are going to bed, the trans-Pacific DXers are just waking up. Oh, and if you don't believe the cat litter grounding story, check out the photos on my website, https://members.aol.com/bacontiforward/bamlog.htm. On a final note, let me take this opportunity to bid a sad farewell to Ernie Cooper, who passed away on April 28 due to complications of pneumonia. Many of you may remember Ernie as the Musings of the Members columnist in the National Radio Club's DX News magazine from 1946 to 1983. For those who had a chance to meet Ernie at NRC conventions and local get-togethers, he was much more than that. He was a friend and a source of encouragement through the years. He will be missed, but not forgotten. 73 and good DX.
Mark Dernberger on the road again, and part two of our Clear Channel band scan as we take our tape recorders to Coon Rapids, Minnesota, the transmitter site of Clear Channel Station WCCO 830, 50,000 watts, and a part of our heritage and history in this part of the country and actually around the world for many, many years.
And what a history here at WCCO.
We're talking with former chief engineer Jerry Miller.
Can I just share with you a little bit of that story? WCCO, as we know it, was put on the air as WLAG in 1922. 1924, after it had been off the air for a short period of time, turned to WCCO on 810.
How much power do you think?
500 watts of power, and then it went to 5,000 watts. And then in 1937, 38, it turned to a 50,000 watt clear channel station. But it was exciting times, if you can imagine. 1922, 24, everything was busting out all over in America. I mean, they call it the Roaring Twenties, where Model A's and steam engines and telegraph lines and railroads were crossing the country. And this fine signal here was skipping across America to Finland and Norway and Europe. And so the genie was out of the bottle for that time. This was an exciting time. People were crossing oceans, coming to America, and CCO was a part of that, along with WLAG, and KDKA was part of that. And so it was very, very exciting times. And here was WCCO up in the Midwest, and they were launching this magnificent conveyance for the public.
But they weren't operating with a vertical tower, if I remember correctly.
No, as a matter of fact, there were two towers out here, and a long wire strung between the two towers.
A horizontal flat top, is that what?
A horizontal flat top, and as a matter of fact, there is a plan ready to go, I would hope, to string up a horizontal wire. It would be directional, of course, to some extent, but the way it's laid out, it would cover the Minneapolis-St. Paul area pretty effectively. So, yes, going back to those early days when the Lone Ranger rode the prairie and WCCO was flying, it was a long wire antenna between two towers.
Now, when did the big tower go up, the one that's out there now?
The big tower went up in 37, 38, and it's still there today. It's 652 feet high.
Jerry, here's a map put out by the U.S. Government Printing Office with some circles on it that purport to be the signal coverage that WCCO would have had with 750,000 watts. And there was some talk at one time of selecting a group of clear channel stations and giving them that kind of power, more than 10 times the currently authorized 50,000. Look at those signals. Daytime signal down into the middle of Arkansas and Oklahoma and Colorado and Wyoming. Oh my word.
That proposal was during the time that you worked here at WCCO, as you recall.
Yes.
And this was to cover the white areas in the United States, and a few of the stations proposed to have that happen. And of course, then it turned to where Clear Channel does not have the meaning it did in the early days, where it was really clear. WCCO currently is only protected out to the about the 750-mile contour. In terms of the redefined clear channel
What do you say by protected? There can't be a station inside that?
Yeah, it depends on what the frequency is in the ground, but it's basically out to about the 750 miles. It says 760 on here.
All right. Let's continue our tour, Jerry. Where are we going now?
Well, we're going down to where we had the water storage area.
water storage.
And that was for the original transmitters, the Western Electric transmitters. And we had water down here. We also had some...
What did you use the water for?
For water-cooled transmitter tubes. I ran through the tubes. And these big concrete blocks were for generators, grid generators and bias generators, along with some other ones on another in the other room down here.
Basically, what we had down here was a couple of big motors spinning.
Yes.
Spooky place, I bet, when it was running. Huh?
Yeah.
Here's an old loudspeaker. Let's see what happens. No, I don't hear any ghosts coming out of there. Okay, you just turned on another.
We had, I don't know how the pipes went. I think they went through that wall, but there was also a water supply in this room, I remember.
And you said water, purified water.
Purified distilled water for the transmitters. And the transmitter tubes were not quite 6 feet tall. Of course, they were water cooled to keep them cool.
How did you take the heat out of the water?
There was a heat exchanger, like a radiator, piped it through the radio and discharged it into the building for heat in the building. It's cold here today. I've still got my jacket on.
Yep.
This is the baffles for the air intake from the comes from the cupola. On the top of the roof, there's a cupola, and that air falls all the way down. We're in the basement now, all the way down this shaft, into this there, and then it's fed back into the transmitter for cooling.
All right, judging by the look of this next structure here, this must be the fallout shelter. And I bet it is, because it's got that L-shaped entrance. Why did they do this? Why do you come in and then have to go to the right and then go to the left?
Well, radiation travels in a straight line, and that would prevent that.
It couldn't make the turn,
theoretically.
All right, so now we're in the fallout shelter. And like the fallout shelters in the other stations we've visited, this one seems to become a storeroom for stuff. Old turntables, tape recorders, amplifiers, and cots.
And then in this little room adjacent to the fallout shelter is where we kept a store of food and water. I wonder if it's in there. Some of the stores. Here's survival biscuits in there and other different things. Water we had in this private room here, which is a combination of that and storage, but we had the foodstuffs in here.
How much food did you keep here?
A month's supply at one time. I see it's...
For two people?
Yeah,
probably.
For two people.
And it's still here?
Well, I wouldn't want to eat those biscuits. And then we had a...
Three bunks.
Three bunks so that you could have your own bunk and the own air exchanger. Now, this is a filtered air. It's a tube that runs up an outside, and it's a charcoal filter at that end. And it catches all the alpha and beta particles that might be in the air from radiation. So when those particles are filtered out, so you have...
So this is your filtered fresh air supply.
Filtered fresh air.
Okay, and then, as is usual in the fallout shelter, we see enough equipment here to run the station from right here.
Well, that's right. And of course, the first thing to run it is you got to have command and control. And in this panel right here is the control of transmitter 1 and transmitter 2.
This is a clone of the desk that you showed us upstairs. Yeah. So you can turn them on and off from here. You can switch either transmitter to the antenna.
And so you have control of the transmitter from here in a manual sort of way. There's a audio console.
So this is a mini radio station.
A little mini radio station. You have a tape that we put up here. I think this is the same tape that I put up in 94. And when you hear that tape on the air, you know that there's something wrong, that you've lost your link. This station is linked both by a landline and an STL, studio to transmitter link, to downtown Minneapolis. And if both of those should be severed for some reason or another.
If, God help it, there were a fire at the studio.
Exactly. This will give you, at that speed, I suppose, an hour?
Hour and a half.
Hour and a half to get out here and take control.
So this is canned programming.
Canned programming.
This,
And I got to tell you a side story. Very early on in my days here at WCCO, we had a bad storm, and Bob Wallner said, "You better go out to the transmitter." I was out here as a kind of a journeyman under George Collier. I didn't really know the ropes too much, but he dispatched me out here, and lo and behold, we lost both feeds, the landline and the STL at the time. So we had a transmitter with no input audio. Aha! My chance to be on the air. And I was down here at the studio. We had a 16-inch turntable here. Right. And so I played records,
and made the station break.
Oh,
on the hour.
What a thrill. On 50,000 watts.
And at that time, I was running up and down the stairs trying to figure out what was wrong, how to coordinate with the telephone company to get the service back, playing the records down here, and making the station break. So that's about, as you can well imagine, that's the only time they ever used this old guy's voice on here.
Did you do a legal ID?
I did a legal ID, which consisted of WCCO followed by the city of license.
What a thrill.
And then I ended up staying here for a few days after that. I wonder what my wife thought.
All right, coming out of there, now back into another big room, and there's humongous power control panels on the wall over here to my right. That obviously is for the
Four 440 coming into the building from two directions, two different power sources from two different sources of power come into the site and then are distributed to the transmitters. And we have...
So theoretically, if a windstorm hits and a big branch hits a power line, and if it does take one, the side that's being fed that's on the air,
right?
How do you switch back to the other side?
Well, it's got a transfer panel. It's a parallel feed.
Automatically?
Yeah. And, of course, then if that fails, we have a big diesel transfer panel back there that'll transfer from the land power to the diesel power.
Now, what is this humongous thing that looks like a big old motor?
Well, this is for the Western Electric bias generators.
This is like a generator set?
Yeah.
Like a dynamo. This shaft turned and generated a voltage.
Exactly.
Well, here's the output. Here's the wire. Look at the size of those wires.
And that stands on a concrete curb, which is knee-high, 6 feet across and 12 feet long. And there were two of these at one time. There's only one here left. I don't know why where the other one went, but it's gone.
This thing's humongous.
It runs at 1,750 RPMs. It delivers 550 amps, and the voltage is 24 volts.
So this might have been the power supply for the filaments for the tubes. Now, here's another room full of stuff. Oh, my goodness.
This room is directly below the transmitters, and you can see there's a big hole in the ceiling up there, and this is where the water cooling was piped in here. And this was kind of a Frankenstein's monster room, if you can imagine the pipes and the water and the plumbing and running up to the transmitter. So that transmitter was supported by air going out the top of 18-foot ceiling, and then we're in the basement right now with another 18, 20-foot ceiling, which housed the water transfer.
This place is pretty well maintained, painted well, and the steps are in good shape.
The new generator's out there.
Got the key for the generator?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, we have to start the generator.
Oh.
We have to start the generator. Now, you know what? All your listeners are going, please start the generator. What do you think?
I don't know. It might even be set.
Yeah, you're right. Okay.
There's an alarm.
And now we are in the boiler room.
Yes, one nice thing about the WCCO transmitter building is the fact that it's built like a bunker. Please understand that there's poured concrete walls that are 12 inches thick. A boiler system that gives you hot water throughout the whole building. A boiler with a self-contained 15 or 20,000 gallon tank that will give it
diesel.
Well,
it's fuel oil.
It's fuel oil. It provides for the not only the generator but for the heat in the building, the hot water. And when you look at this, it looks like you're in a ship.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
It does. Engine room of the ship, where you can see we've got 5 pounds of pressure on there right now.
Okay, we're going up another set of steps to the machine shop. And here we see a lathe, a serious lathe, a drill press, a grinder. Why would you need all these tools here?
Well, because we tool our own parts. You would make your sockets if you had to, or you could turn out any part that you might need, because you had to be more or less self-sufficient in those days. This was kind of the command tower. During the war, there were lights put on this whole facility. Each guy wire had a light shining on it on the side of the building. There's lights that face out to the
antenna tuning unit, which is a building about 600-700 feet from here to the north of where we're standing. We're standing in a kind of a, if you can envision, a bridge with windows. It's kind of like a bridge of a ship where you can look north, south, east, every but west, and kind of survey the situation. So you'd have lights at night to see the towers. And
so they took the potential of sabotage very seriously.
Absolutely. And especially with this big voice of WCCO. It was, of course, one of the very strong players in the Conelrad system, and then EAS, and getting out the word.
I sense you have some thoughts you want to share with us.
In 1960, I got on with Kermit Sucher at WCCO Radio and stayed there for 32 years. But gosh, what a delight, what a journey. And the only thing that I can think about is we step in now to the new millennium, that so much of that is kind of repeating itself, at least in my mind, with the internet. And with all the different modes of conveying and communicating that is coming online, I'm as excited now as I was then, because it's not about the delivery system. Of course, AM was magical and romantic, and the fade in and the fade out and coast to coast and listening, oh, that was magical. But in my mind today, surfing the net and what's happening in the world, it's unbelievable. So it's been a lifelong journey, and being able to share that with you here and walk this walk that maybe only you and I really appreciate.
Oh, I think you'll be pleasantly surprised to find that most of our listeners are right here with you, Jerry.
Okay. Well, it's been wonderful. I think CCO is sure it's about generators and transmitters and brick and mortar and electrons and 25 amps into a system, but it's not about the delivery system. It's about what is being said, what is being felt, what good you can do. You know, you learn your trade, you earn enough, and then you got to return something back to the industry. And I got to tell you, Mark, that if any broadcaster that I've known has returned some of the heritage, it's been you in your articles of Clear Channel. Hey, this is just the beginning. By the time we get another 20 years down the road, it's going to be unbelievable. 10 times what we've already seen.
Jerry Miller, Mark Dernberger here on the road again for the DX Audio Service. We'll be back next month. Till then, good listening, DXers.
Thanks, Mark. And now we're back here in the DX Audio Service Sheetrock announce booth after braving the cold in Dayton. 40 degrees with wind sometimes 15 miles per hour or more in the flea market area. Just ask Dale Hamm or Dave Marthouse. They'll tell you after trying to scarf up bargains there in the flea market area. Anyway, let's talk about the 2002 National Radio Club Convention. The convention is going to be held over Labor Day weekend here in Lima, Ohio. The convention is going to be at the Hampton Inn, the same hotel as the 2000 National Radio Club Convention was held. The convention starts on Friday, August 30th, with registration starting up about 9 o'clock and activities starting at about 12 noon. The convention ends on Monday, September 2nd at 12 noon. Now, there's two convention rates depending if you're coming alone or with a spouse or significant other. If you're coming alone, the cost is $40 per member. This includes the dinners, meeting room access, full registration at the convention, etc., etc. If you're coming with a spouse or significant other, it's $60 for both of you. Now, spouse or significant other rate is limited only to married or significant other couples living at the same geographic coordinates, traveling together, and sharing the same room during the convention. This offer is not available as a way to get your friends or casual acquaintances in for cheap. If you'd like to register, we have two ways to do it. First of all, on the web, you'll find a web page for the 2002 National Radio Club Convention, which conveniently takes MasterCard, Discover Card, Visa, and American Express. Or you can do it the old-fashioned way just by sending us a check or money order here to the DX Audio Service. Make sure it's payable to the National Radio Club and put convention down in the memo area. Just send it to me here at the DX Audio Service. Now, if you're coming to the convention, we assume you need a room, so here's the room information. The Hampton Inn is located at 1933 Rocheman Avenue, just off the intersection of I-75 and State Route 117 and 309. The phone number for the hotel is 419-225-8300. When you call and make your room reservation, mention the code NRC. That locks you into the convention rate of $69 per night plus 12% room tax. By the way, there's no limit on the number of people in the room, so if you want to split a room with some folks, please do so by all means. Now, we have a block of 20 rooms, and there'll be three king-size rooms, 15 queen-style rooms with two beds, and two handicap rooms. Book direct with the Hampton Inn in Lima. Don't forget the convention rate. first come, first serve on the rooms. And we hope that you do book at the Hampton Inn and try not to go cheap down the road at some other hotel. If you do book with the Hampton, first of all, you get a lot of perks. For lunch and dinner, guests get 10% off any meal at Ralphie's Sports Bar, 10% off any meal at Texas Roadhouse Steakhouse. There will also be a bunch of other coupons given out by your convention host to people who stay at the Hampton Inn. And these are for restaurants in the area as well as some that you might be able to use at home. WNRC will be up for the event, as will a lot of other things. We'll have more on the 2002 National Radio Club Convention, but right now, I've been instructed to wrap it up very quickly, as I've been trying to do, and flip over to Side 2 for more of the DX Audio Service. Concierto FM 94.7.